From the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com, this is the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast. Coming up on the program,
we're going to talk about a handful of options for growing indoors during the long winter.
Mike Novak with his environmental report, your questions, our answers.
And we have guest, the creative vegetable gardener, Megan Kane from Madison. And she's going to talk with us about many things, and she's a minimalist, and she's got some great gardening tips.
All that and more coming up right now on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast.
The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast is permeating into your ears with your host, Joey Baird.
And it could be the weeds. Some gardeners try to get all the weeds out of their garden. Other gardeners leave them in their garden. It's really a decision that you need to make. There's benefits to both sides of that. It's just something that you need to figure out what you want to do for your garden.
And Holly Baird.
Canning is a science. When you're canning, you want to make sure you follow the directions, follow the recipe, don't cut corners. Don't replace things. It's crucial to you, your health, and your family.
They're professional gardeners with full-time jobs, and they're on the air now.
Welcome to the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast, a podcast for the health-conscious organic gardener worldwide. I am your host, Joy Baird. Beside me is my wife, co-host, gardening partner, best friend,
Holly Baird.
Behind the TWVG microphone here at the WI Garden Media Studios in southeast Wisconsin. The information you're going to hear is important, vital to the life and success of your garden. You just may have to tweak some of the dates and times you applied for your particular growing area. If you're tuning in for the very first time, we welcome you. If you've tuned in for all 33 episodes, thank you. And we hope you've learned and enjoyed the information we've provided. If you're tuning in for the very first time and you have no idea who we are and you stumbled upon us because of the guest or the topic, Holly's going to fill you in a little bit about what we do. And how we do it, and then we'll get into some of the options that you can grow indoors all year round if you're not tired of growing outdoors.
So what we do is we have over 700 videos on our website about how to grow food, what to do with the food you grow, to just helpful tips on how to be more successful at growing food, building your soil, canning, freezing, all that good stuff. Then we have our quarterly digital magazines, which are free. They're downloadable or printable. And we have those come out every 3 months. And those are full-color, high-quality digital magazines. And then we have this podcast.
As well as some other nicks and knacks along the way. Well, it's getting to that time for most people, most portions of the United States or the Northern Hemisphere here, that outdoor gardening is coming to a close. And for some, that's sad. For others, that's exciting. And for some, have been shut down for literally weeks now. September or Labor Day, and they've ripped their tomato plants out, and they're done. Well, we grow and go until we can't go and grow anymore outdoors, and we're still growing and going right now in southeast Wisconsin.
Surprisingly.
Because of the little bubble of warmth that we get off Lake Michigan here in the Milwaukee area.
Bubble of warmth.
Bubble of warmth. You look at the radar, and there's a...
I know.
It's 5 to 7 degrees.
I'm so happy in my bubble.
It's 5 to 7 degrees above what the surrounding inland areas are, which has saved us from a number
bubble.
Of frosts. which has saved us from a number of frosts that other portions of the state has already received. So we'll go until we can't go anymore. But for some people who enjoy growing, whether large or small, they want to grow indoors. And there's a number of options, inexpensive as well as investmental,
do get people that will ask, and even my friends who don't even grow vegetables will ask me, is it expensive to grow indoors, you know? And I think what you have to look at is...
What level do you want to achieve?
First of all, what level do you want to achieve? How much you're willing to invest? And it is exactly an investment. You might think, okay, this costs X amount of money, and I'm only going to use it for 4 months or 5 months, but you're going to use it for 5 months times however many years.
And in addition, we'll get into this, what other things can you use that investment for besides...
For starting seeds.
Right. And we'll get into that. So let's start with the inexpensive. Let's start with the cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll work our way towards the more investmental properties that you can invest in order to grow indoors.
So I would say the cheapest option is just your window. And we have a very successful...
Not to buy a window, but to use the window to grow it.
Yeah. And we would recommend definitely a south-facing window, then an east or west, and if you have a north window, then good luck. And we have an ideal south-facing window in our kitchen. We grow herbs, we grow a few coleus plants, and then we have a dwarf lime tree, lemon-lime tree. It's actually some sort of hybrid lemon-lime tree, which I found out, I found the receipt finally. And so that's what we have. I think that's all we have in that window. Yeah. So we have, you know, just a little bit of greenery there, and it's nice. It grows year-round, but we started it as a winter project. I think we started the lime tree in the fall. Okay, so you can start with that, and you can start your seeds that way, too. We started our seeds for, I don't know, 3-4 years or whatever, where we started them in the window, and we just kept rotating them every day or every other day so that the stalks wouldn't get too leggy.
And we're talking, you know, in the window, we're growing herbs, and the basil plant has been growing there for going on 3 years.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, herbs only need partial sunlight, which I'm talking 3 to 5 hours of close to direct sunlight. You can grow leaf lettuce. Now, if you're trying to grow a tomato or, you know, a pepper or something like that, we'll get into different applications. It can be done by a window. It can be done by a full south-facing, full sun window. It's a little more of a challenge. It takes a little longer to get them ripe. The tomatoes taste fine, but they're much more thick-skinned because of the time it takes to get them ripe. But anyway, go ahead about the window.
Okay, so, yes, you can do the seeds, seed starting by the window as well. So that's one option. So you're basically just investing in whatever containers you need, which you can reuse a lot of stuff, and then the soil, and then, you know, good organic potting soil, and then the seeds, plants, what have you. That's what you're investing in. Then you can go a step up, which would be some grow lights.
Traditional, just regular shop lights, you know, the T5s that are 4 foot long with that metal shroud over it, which, if we're going to talk about investing in grow lights, I would avoid the tube lights. There are some tubes out there that now incorporates LED and all that stuff, but it's only T5s. I would invest in a LED grow light.
Mm-hmm.
They're small, they're compact, they have all spectrums of light, very inexpensive for what you're getting, very portable, and you can hang it underneath a table. We've worked with Happy Leaf LED, very affordable lights, and they'll last indefinitely, low power usage, and produce a lot of light in a very small area.
It's pretty too.
Oh, it's pretty too, but you don't look directly in the light.
No.
So that's a step. You can go.
But it is amazing. That light is tiny, and it just projects so much light.
You can invest in the shop lights with the regular white bulbs or the aquatic or aquarium grow lights, which takes up a lot of space, uses, you know, power, and then you have to replace the bulbs every couple of years because they start to get black on the ends. And some, or I think a lot of them, are made with mercury in them, too. So that's an environmental thing that you want to keep in mind. The LEDs... I don't know what the chemistry of those are, but I've never heard of those having a mercury in the LEDs that I'm aware of. But the that LEDs will last indefinitely, so you're not throwing these light bulbs out every 2 to 5 years.
Right. Okay, so we have that. Then we have this next step out would be to get a grow tent, right?
Would you say inexpensive grow tent. Mm-hmm. An inexpensive one. Again, you could set it by a window, try to get some warmth in there. Really, if you're going to go with the investment or expense of a grow tent, you might as well go, and really depends what are we wanting to grow. If you're just wanting to grow some greens, some herbs, a windowsill, LED lights, even shop lights can perform that.
Mm-hmm.
LEDs, much more efficient. And you can utilize those for growing greens as well as some herbs in the winter, and also turn around and start your seeds underneath those. But if you're wanting to go to that next level, go to that next step, to basically you're done growing outside, you're inside growing to the capacity or the plants that you were growing outside, the eggplants, the peppers, the green beans, the tomatoes, the beets, the leaf lettuce, the Swiss chard, all of that. You want a unit that can do all of that, because you just don't want to go in the effort to buy El Cheapo model you bought on sale
work all this effort, put all this effort, invest all this time and product, you know, seeds and soil and containers into a unit that's not designed or capable of handling what you're hoping to get out of it.
Right.
So we would recommend...
Well, we recommend the Eco Garden House.
Right.
But, like you said, it depends on what you're trying to grow. If you are trying to grow successfully a variety of vegetables throughout the garden or throughout the winter, then yeah, I would recommend the Eco Garden House hands down.
Now, real quickly, we covered this in a question in a previous episode. The Eco Garden House is a all-inclusive indoor greenhouse, essentially, is what it is. It's got grow lights that are on a system where you can raise and lower them. It has an irrigation system, water reservoir, fresh water, and gray water. If you do it right, you don't have any gray water, as well as a thermostat, fans that can climate control, timer for the lights, timer for the irrigation system, and all that. You can follow that series on our website underneath the Eco Garden House tab under the categories on the right hand side, and that's what we're growing. Indoors, the plants that we enjoy growing outdoors, and we're also going to overwinter a pepper and bring it in and put it in there. But essentially, the thing, and here's what we want to, here's what the important portion of this is. With any type of indoor growing unit, whether it's the T5 lights, whether it's the LEDs, whether you invest in an eco garden house, you want certain plants grow in certain durations of light. So, for example, in the Eco Garden House, we've got it set on 11 and a half hours on, and to 12 and a half hours off. Because certain plants are short day, certain plants are neutral day, certain plants are long day.
Right.
Just like outside, in the early spring, you plant your cool weather crops, and as the daylight gets longer, those plants realize that and stop producing the foliage or the bulb and produce the they go to seed. Shoot up and put the seed on.
Yeah, they go to seed.
They go to seed. Same thing with the Eco Garden House. You can we're doing radishes in there too. You can mimic the daylight duration to where, well, for example, peppers, corn, which we're not doing corn in there, tomatoes. Eggplant, I believe beans are the same way. I don't have the list in front of me. But those all, it doesn't matter if you have 4 hours of light or 24 hours of light, they're still going to put flower on and produce fruit. On the other hand, lettuce, radishes, beets, turnips, if you have the light too long, those are going to go to seed, just like they would outside if the day length gets too long. So that's, you know, you got to do a little search or research, but it's very rewarding to have this unit. It's all inclusive. It's got a shroud over it, and it's climate controlled. If you have it in a room, you wouldn't know the light was on pretty much because of the way it's all secluded with the heavy cover over it and the zip opening. But that's on the higher end of an investment, and in the springtime, you can here's the benefit of this. You can utilize that as a seed starting greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the plants that you are growing in there, if you want to shut it off in spring, you could, and you've got containers. Let's say you've got a container of peppers and a container of tomatoes. You could essentially take those and pot them out in the actual garden.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just take the whole thing out and get it, you know, hardened off and take them outside, and you've already got an established plant. If you want to go to the realm of you've got four varieties of tomatoes in that Eco Garden House and that you like, you can propagate those, start them. You don't have to worry about seed, so you're taking an exact clone from the mother plant, starting them in seed, you know, water, getting root and put them in starter seed starting, and then move them out, and you're already ahead of the game.
Right.
So it's something to think about. Whether you want to go inexpensive because you just want a few things, or you want to go extreme to the far end that you want to basically mimic what you're doing outside indoors, and there's a little science and it's a little fun to do, you know, figure all this stuff out. It's either way you want to go. And some of you may just say, you know, I'm done until February when I start, or March when I start seeds again.
That's okay. You know, sometimes you just want that break, and we understand that. But we're enjoying doing the the winter growing.
The technology has allowed us to grow virtually year-round without having to invest in a heated greenhouse outdoors like maybe somebody would have had to 15 or 20 years ago if they wanted to achieve what we are doing indoors now.
Mm-hmm.
So coming up after the break, Mike Novak will be with us with his environmental report, and your questions are answers right after this.
A gardener knows that the key to a good plant is its roots. With poor roots, the end result is not good. Conventional pots and trays cause roots to wrap around and become root-bound. Then you try to unwrap the roots at the time of planting, hoping not to break them. But never again with the Root Maker, a non-chemical innovation that naturally air prunes roots to create more vigorous roots. Never a root-bound plant again. Whether trees, flowers, or edibles, home gardener, or commercial grower, more roots means healthier, more productive plants. To get your own, visit rootmaker.com.
Oh yeah, what you say? You say Nasala Kombucha. It'll put some glide in your stride and some pep in your step. Nasala Kombucha. Yeah.
Nasala Kombucha makes your body happy. Nasala Kombucha makes your body smile.
At DollarSeed.com, all of our seeds are only a dollar a pack. And we have online resources that teach you all about the rewarding hobby of growing your own plants, flowers, herbs, and vegetables. Imagine the joy you'll feel when your children actually help you harvest your first garden crop, or the pride of knowing you'll never need a florist again. Visit DollarSeed.com and grow a little magic of your own for just a dollar. DollarSeed.com. What could be healthier?
Now back to two gardeners that make no claims that they know a thing about golfing.
We don't golf, so we're not going to listen to podcasts about golf or watch television shows on how to golf.
But they're pretty good at gardening, Joey and Holly Bear.
Welcome back to the program. We encourage you to check out the sponsors. Just under the sponsor tab on our page at the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener.
No, podcast page.
Podcast tab. Podcast tab. At the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener.com under podcast tab. Support them as they support us.
Each program, our good friend from Q4 Radio from Chicago, Illinois, joins us. His name is Mike Novak, and he has the environmental report. Most times, it's information that we already should have known, but he's gracious enough to inform us of how informed we really are about the environment that we live in. And here is Mike Novak.
And now to a man who's not afraid to tell you what you need to do to keep the planet he lives on clean.
Take your food scraps out to your compost pile. Screw in a compact fluorescent light bulb. Turn on a window fan instead of an air conditioner. Low flow, baby. Shower heads and toilets. Take one napkin at Starbucks instead of six.
Mike Novak.
Welcome to another installment of the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Environmental Report. I'm Mike Novak, and you can hear me live each Sunday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. Central Time on Q4 Radio, which streams at QUE4.org and on the Q4 Radio Facebook page. You can also get my podcasts at MikeNovak.net. If you live in the Midwest part of the United States, you might be aware of a group called Chicago Wilderness. As they say themselves, that phrase might sound like an oxymoron, but you have only to scratch the surface to understand that there is abundant wildlife and expanses of natural areas in Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Michigan that merit preservation, improvement, and expansion. Chicago Wilderness is celebrating its 20th anniversary in 2016. 200-plus members represent 38 counties and 500 municipalities with a population of more than 10 million people. From invasive species removal to land regeneration to childhood education and volunteer action, their efforts significantly contribute to regional resiliency and economic vitality. And when I talk about economic vitality, I mean an area with a gross regional product of more than $575 billion. Chicago Wilderness is in the middle of something they call One Home, a campaign to support our species, a crowdfunded campaign to support wildlife in the Chicago region. Over the last year, wildlife specialists, ecologists, and social scientists identified 12 priority animal species in the Chicago wilderness region. Here are the species: Blanding's turtle, red-headed woodpecker, rusty-patched bumblebee, the freshwater mussel Ellipse, bobolink, monarch butterfly, little brown bat, mottled sculpin, which is a small fish, Henslow's sparrow, blue-spotted salamander, regal fritillary butterfly, and this guy. I am a smooth green snake. I may look scary to humans, but really, I'm harmless. I'm usually minding my own business, soaking in sun rays or chasing insects. Sadly, the prairies in Illinois are dwindling, and it's becoming difficult to live without my habitat. Outside the prairies, everything from lawnmowers to pet cats can hurt me. And if you release a pet snake into the wild, I might catch a disease. My camouflage is pretty good, but maybe you can see now that I need your help. Help Chicago Wilderness, Peggy Notabart Nature Museum, and partners protect me and other priority species like me at chicagowilderness.org/species. Boy, that voice sounds familiar. Supporting these species and their habitats enhances air and water quality, nurtures a multitude of wildlife populations, and preserves the last fragments of our region's globally rare ecosystems. This is what Chicago Wilderness does best. You can donate to the One Home campaign by going to chicagowilderness.org through the end of November, and I hope you do. That's my report for today. For more information about my show, live streaming, or podcasts, go to mikenowak.net, MikeNowak.net. Go green or go home.
Thank you, Mike, for that information. We always appreciate you coming on the program and sharing it with us. We got one more appearance by him this year, and that'll wrap up the podcast series with Mike Nowak for this year. Now it's time for your questions and our answers. If you don't like our answers, you should avoid it asking the question. So one question we've got, we'll just start with the list. We got three of them here. So, Holly, you've got the first one.
Sure. So she wants to know why her onions didn't do so well.
Well, there's a number of factors.
And so here's the thing. She said that, you know, they grew. They didn't grow very big bulbs. Okay, so we know that. But everything else grew, and she ended up with some nice chives or whatnot. And I think the biggest factor is the right kind of onion, the correct kind of onion.
Onions fall into three different categories, and you need to search the variety name or the type and find out what category they fall in, because this is not labeled on your seed package. There are short day, long day, and neutral day onions. Now, in the northern portions of the United States, the long day onion is what is required in order to grow successful bulbs to start with here, because during the peak times of summer, we get the most sunlight. The days are the longest and more sunlight falls on the garden. Mm-hmm. These onions recognize this, and at a certain point, they stop top growth and begin bulb development. If you're in the southern portions of the United States, short day onions is what you want to grow, because you get shorter durations of light during the day. If you're between, I think it's like San Francisco, St. Louis to Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. You want that neutral day because your days are kind of, you know, in that area. You can look at any United States map and just type in short day, long day, neutral day onions, and the map will tell you on your favorite search engine. If you grow short day onions in a long day area or long day onions in a short day area, you're just going to get chives. You may get marble size onions, but you're just going to get basically top growth. Okay, so now let's say you got long day onions growing in the northern portions of the United States. Mm-hmm. So we got the right type of onion. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of factors that go into successful bulb development. One being good loose enriched soil. for the bulb to develop, and onions need nitrogen to grow successfully, not like 25, 15, 30, but you want a good amount of nitrogen in the soil, because the key to an onion is the top growth. Mm-hmm. For every limb or shroud or whatever you call, whatever you want to call those...
layer?
The green stalks.
Oh, that's like for the chive?
The chive. For every one of those offset limbs that the plant produces, that is a ring that develops in the bulb once the sunlight reaches that time span that the onion begins to develop the bulb. So you want to have nitrogen up front early in the growing season to get that big, expansive top growth, mm-hmm. and then the bulb will develop. Good, loose, rich soil, and as the bulb develops, you can talk to the old-timers, you want to move almost all of that soil away from the bulb until it's basically just sitting on top of the soil to allow that bulb to expand as large as possible. So we're going to practice some of those in the spring. Now, one other thing before we move to the next question. Based on how you start your onions, whether you buy starts, bulblets, or you start from seed. If you start from seed, that's the best way and you get the right category. Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy pre-started plants, you want to get the starts, which looks like a whole bundle of green pencils. Those are plants that have been grown, started, and then you're just going to slap them in the ground. Or if they're in a seed tray, you really want to avoid the bulblets or the small little onions that are in the net sacks, simply because onions are biennials. Those onions were grown this fall, mid-winter, harvested, packaged, sent to your garden center for the spring. You plant them. The onion already thinks, oh, I'm in my second year of growing because I've already went through a dormant stage. Now I'm growing again. I got to put a seed pod on, and those bulbs you can eat. They are edible, but they do not store because you've got the centralized stalk all the way through the bulb. So that hope that helps. Second question is, what are yacons? We've posted a number of pictures on our Instagram account. You can follow us at The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener on Instagram. If you don't remember that, you can go to our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and a little Instagram thing there you can click and find out about us. What are yacons? We've posted pictures on all of our social media because we have a tremendous crop of them, at least top growth, and based on the information I'm reading, we should have literally hundreds of pounds of yacons if everything goes well. So, Holly, what are yacons?
Sure. So, yacons are a root crop, and in warm climates, they're actually a perennial, but here they won't be because it's too cold. And they are related to the sunflower. They're from...
And Jerusalem artichoke.
Yeah, and the Jerusalem artichoke. They're from Bolivia, originally, I believe.
Andes Mountains. I guess that's the Bolivia.
Yeah. And they're kind of like... I would say kind of like a jicama because they got that crunch to them. They're a little bit sweet, but then a little bit of like a celery taste, but it's a nice bright taste.
They're like 85% water, 90% water, somewhere in that range. And if somebody gave you it, you would think it was a sweet potato root.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very similar. And these are propagated through rhizomes that you save over the winter and start in the spring. And if you want to find out all about how the best way to save these things are or where to get them, or I think we'll possibly have some available for sale in the spring. But anyway, if you want to know how to grow them and overwinter them, we've got a lot of information on our website under the Yacon tab. Now people are going to say, well, what does it taste like? Based on your taste buds, between a watermelon, apple, carrot, cross, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the yacon syrup comes from that everybody says is just the miracle weight loss thing. Dr. Oz, if you're familiar with him in the United States, he made this very popular a couple of years ago, which we're not growing it for the yacon syrup. We're growing it for the actual tubers.
And seeds.
And the rhizomes.
Mm-hmm.
The rhizomes, so we can save them and grow them again next year. There's not a whole lot of recipes online about, one, preparing them, or two, preserving them. I haven't found a thing about canning them. Now, I do see videos of people canning them, but it's a low-acid root,
mm-hmm.
and individuals say, well, you just treat it like potatoes. Well, potatoes, you pressure can them for, 40 minutes with the skins off. I'm not going to go into pressure canning yacon root because people say, oh, just treat it just like a potato. I don't find that safe. That's not safe for me. You can store them in a cool place, basement, root cellar. We're going to store ours in the stairwell going up to our attic. It gets a lot of cool outdoor temperatures, so the attic kind of like outdoorish temperatures in the winter. So we're going to do that. And you can follow our progress. We'll have a lot of Instagram photos on social media, Facebook, as well as probably some videos on that and all that. And finally, our last question is about pear scrap vinegar. And Holly, you're going to take this one. I recently saw your video on pear scrap vinegar. Thank you. I don't feel bad now. I don't have to throw my pear scraps or my scraps in the compost. My question is, after doing some research, you have to store this in the fridge, or is there some way to make it shelf stable?
Sure. So, fruit scrap vinegar.
And first of all, it can be pears, apples, pineapple skin scraps, right? Is there any other thing that you can make vinegar?
I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, you want to have it stored in your... in the container, in the glass container. You can use glass or ceramic, but obviously you want a lid, so you need to make sure there's a lid. And you want to store it in the fridge. And the reason why you want to store it in the fridge is because the fridge stops the fermentation process. It doesn't actually fully stop it, but it stops it, I'd say, probably about 90%.
Slows it way down because of the coldness.
Yeah. So it doesn't allow for growth and what's the other word? Growth and reproduction.
And now... You see this vinegar in the store in the plastic jugs, the gallon, for like $1.93. What's the difference between that type of vinegar, whether it's white vinegar or apple cider vinegar, and the stuff that we're making or you can make at home? What's the difference there between the two?
So they have a different process, how they bottle it, and then that's something they do in their process.
They pasteurize it.
They pasteurize it, yes.
So basically what they're doing, they're heating it to a certain level, which you can do, and you have to find a reliable source. You can take your own apple cider, pear cider, pineapple cider vinegar, put it through a process, pasteurize it to where you can put it on the shelf and have it shelf stable. But the thing is, you lose a lot of your beneficial properties in that vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are companies that you can buy shelf stable unpasteurized apple cider vinegar. Don't ask me how they do that. I don't know. It has the mother in it. I'm sure that has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the simple method of making pear scrap, apple scrap, pineapple scrap vinegar is the way we've done it. It's on our website. Very simple. You don't waste anything. And after your the process is complete, you can take those scraps and throw them back in your compost pile.
Yeah.
So you're getting double use out of it, basically. And if you have any, you know, bad pears, for us, pears that have dropped on the ground or smashed on the ground that we're not going to process in the canning pear sauce or anything like that right away, we can go ahead and make pear scrap vinegar out of it. And right now we're in the process of making about 6 gallons. Yes, that's a lot. So with that being said, if you have any questions, feel free to submit them through our website underneath the big red button that says question. As well as you can submit them on social media. The most prevalent one or the most active one that we are on is Facebook. Just type in the search bar, The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener. You'll see our little faces, and you can submit it publicly or privately, and we will respond to you. If you can ask it in 140 characters, you can certainly put it. You can do it on our Twitter account, as well as Instagram and the other accounts. So right after the break, our good friend just up the road in Madison, Megan Kane, will be with us. We discuss some things about growing in a cold weather climate, as well as how she became a minimalist. What is it? A minimalist?
Yeah.
Right after this. Water is our most important resource. The key is to capture the rain that falls on your property. No need for bulky rain barrels that are hard to handle and just don't fit in. Rain Reserve has solved the problem for you. With their multi-size and color cube-like units, a rain barrel that does not look like one. Capturing rain, easy, going unnoticed by passerbyers, and blending into the surrounding. Construction so easy, even children can put it together. To get your Rain Reserve, visit RainReserve.com and use coupon code RAIN2016 to save 10% on total purchase. What you feed your plants and soil matters. Tomatoes should be big and juicy, but not at the soil's expense. Age-old growth, bloom, kelp, and fish and seaweed. Reliable fertilizers gardens by supplying the plants and the soil with fast-acting nutrients and natural ingredients to create delicious plants and healthy soil. If you desire juicy tomatoes and healthy soil to grow them in, visit ageold.com for more information on Ageold and our suppliers.
You want your next raised beds to be easy, functional, and beautiful? The Embrace helps you create the garden you've always wanted. Finally, raised beds that everyone can assemble and enjoy. No tools needed. Just slide any lumber into the Embrace corner, fill with your favorite soil mix, and you're ready to plant. Made from 100% recycled steel right here in the USA. And a portion of every sale helps to build school and community gardens all across the country. Let the Embrace help you create your next raised bed. Grow beautifully with the Embrace. Available at local garden centers and online at artofthegarden.net.
Hi, this is Chris Van Cleve, host of the Rose Chat Podcast. You can hear us at rosechatpodcast.com. But right now, we're going to talk vegetables, and you're listening to Joy and Holly Baird on the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast.
Welcome back to the program. If you'd like to find out more information about the sponsors you've just heard and our entire sponsor lineup, you can find that information at our website at thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com. Underneath the podcast tab at the top of the page, those links are also in the show notes below. Well, Holly, let's go to the TWVG hotline and bring in our next guest just a few miles up the road from the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Media Studios.
Welcome to the program, Megan. Growing your own food can be a life-changing experience, especially if you're getting great results. Picture a bowl of plump, freshly picked red peppers, vibrant flowers ripping in the wind, butterflies hovering lazily over the garden. Gardening can feel this satisfying and serene. It helps you live life in full cover. And this website, thecreativevegetablegardener.com, is filled with down-to-earth and actionable advice to help you get the most reward out of the sweat and hours you put into your garden. By first, you can master in the essentials, then indulging in the colorful details that make gardening not just a favorite pastime, but a lifestyle. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And in that introduction, it's very appealing. You know, a lot of people who garden, they think, oh, it's a lot of tedious work. Well, there is a lot of work that goes into it, but with the reward is the harvest. And just like anything in life, you got to put a little effort in to get a reward out of it.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that one of my recent blog posts I wrote about that the food that we get out of our garden is certainly one of the main rewards. But I also think if we let it, our garden can also feed us spiritually and emotionally and creatively and artistically. And that's one thing that I like to explore in my own garden and on my website. How can your garden really feed your body, but also your soul as well?
Definitely. Now, you are called the creative vegetable gardener. You know, some of us kind of have different our own different nicknames or whatever you want to call it. How did you get that name, or why do you call yourself that?
Well, I love to explore the kind of intersection of having a garden that's really productive and produces a lot of food, but one that's also really beautiful as well. And so I think a lot of people tuck their vegetable gardens in the back of their yards. I think historically people think that, oh, vegetable garden, it's not very, very attractive. I'm going to stick it in the back of my yard. And instead, I like to talk about considering making your vegetable garden part of your overall landscape. So my vegetable garden is right in my front yard, right front and center of my landscape. And I spend a lot of time trying to make it look very beautiful as well as produce a lot of food. So that's kind of where the creative part comes from.
Now, I know a lot of people who are listening going, wait, she's got a front yard vegetable garden. In a lot of cities, that's either prohibited or highly restricted. What's the ordinance in your location in the Madison area, I believe that's where you're at, that allows you to have that without penalties or fines?
Yeah, so I live in Madison, Wisconsin, and as long as you don't block any views, so usually you could potentially get cited by the city if you have a really overgrown yard that's blocking site views, so often for cars. And actually, in our yard, it was very overgrown when we purchased it, and we've actually had neighbors thank us for clearing out the yard. So we chopped down a lot of the overgrown shrubs and put in a vegetable garden in the front yard instead. And we have actually had a lot of neighbors thank us for doing that, because now they can see. We live on a corner, so now they can see it around the corner when they're in their cars. but I'm a big proponent of front yard vegetable gardens. When we moved into our neighborhood, it was a great way to meet tons and tons of people in our neighborhood. And still to this day, we've lived there for about 2.5 years. Almost every time I'm in my garden, one of my neighbors stopped by to say hi, ask a question, or compliment our vegetable garden. So it's a great way to, I think, create a little bit of community in your neighborhood.
Definitely. Now, we all have our own stories of how we got involved in vegetable gardening and how we came to be with it. How did you get into vegetable gardening?
Well, I actually grew up in Philadelphia, so a pretty urban city. I lived in a row home. We never had a yard. I actually didn't know anyone that gardened. I didn't even think about how vegetables were grown. I didn't know any farmers, and actually we didn't really eat a lot of vegetables growing up. But about in my mid-20s, I ended up thinking that I wanted to learn how to grow food. I'm not exactly sure where that thought came from, but I was living in San Francisco, so I just have to chalk it up to living in California. Sometimes strange things happen to you. And I ended up getting an internship on a farm in Missouri. So I moved from San Francisco to Missouri. It was a huge, huge shock to learn how to live in a rural area. And I worked on the farm, and that was kind of the beginning of my love affair with gardening. It really shot my life on a totally different direction. I had never known that I loved plants. And I loved gardening until that time, and I was in about my mid-20s at that point.
Oh, okay. So in your book, Super Easy Food Preserving, you talk about preserving the harvest without canning. What was your inspiration for this, and if you want to just kind of talk about your book and what people can find in there as well?
Sure. Well, I am a minimalist in all things in my life, including gardening, so I always seek the easiest solution first, the most simple thing first, and try that out. So when I had lived on that farm in Missouri, I learned how to do some food preserving, and it was all canning pretty much what we did. And then when my husband and I moved to Madison, we continued to garden, and we continued to do food preserving. And we did a lot of started with doing canning, and then it just felt like a lot of work. More work than I wanted to put in. So I started to think there's got to be some easier ways to put away food. And so over the years, I did some experimentation and reading about how other people did it, and then kind of honed it down to the ways that I like to preserve food. So I mostly store food fresh. I'll store things in my basement like onions and garlic and sweet potatoes and winter squash. And then I'll store things in my fridge. So I store a lot of beets and carrots and cabbage in my refrigerator. They last for many, many months of the winter. Usually we're still eating our own beets and carrots in April and May out of our fridge. And then I also do some freezing. So a lot of vegetables can be frozen. Some things can be frozen raw, like kale and peppers, and some things benefit from a little bit of steaming or blanching, like broccoli and green beans can kind of go either way. You could do them raw or you can cook them. I started to talk to a lot of gardeners that I knew about easy food preserving and kind of said, hey, did you know that you can freeze kale raw, or that you can just chop up peppers and throw them in the freezer, or you can store garlic in your basement for eight months of the year. And a lot of people didn't know that, and so I had a lot of conversations about easy food preserving. So eventually I decided, you know what, I should write a book. And so I compiled a lot of my knowledge and my practice over time into a book that's available as a print book or an ebook on my website.
Now, that's interesting. You say the way you went through it, you went from canning to preserving without canning.
Some people will start with the way you are in, or you are currently preserving, freezing and refrigerating, and move into the canning process. So it's an interesting transition for you compared to what other people sometimes will tell us how they got into it.
Yeah, it is kind of funny that way. And like I said, I like to do what feels most simple, because like everybody, I have a busy life and I feel like I don't always have time to do canning. So I have really been moved into those other techniques, and actually this year I've been doing a lot more fermenting, which is very, very simple as well, and another great way to preserve food for very long amounts of time with very little work.
Great. Yeah, fermentation is definitely is fun and something we've been getting into as well. Now, if you had to give a quick food preservation tip, what would you say?
Well, thinking about this time of year, I'm still thinking, I actually do the majority of my food preserving in September and October, and there's still some things that I haven't gotten to yet. And one of the tips that I like to give people is to remember that you don't have to grow everything you preserve. And I used to think, I just grow extra things in my garden and that's what I preserve. And sometimes I would buy, go strawberry picking or go blueberry picking because I didn't have those things in my garden. And then I realized one day, well, I could actually buy vegetables in bulk and specifically for preserving. And that was kind of a big light bulb moment for me. It sounds kind of common sense, but I don't know. I never thought about it before. So this time of year, I actually visit my local farmer's market, and on my list is to buy a whole bunch of broccoli. So broccoli is pretty inexpensive right now because it's a fall crop, so a lot of people have a lot of it. So I'll buy a big bag of broccoli and freeze it, and I also buy winter squash. I'll go to the farmer's market with a couple crates or boxes, look at the – I primarily buy acorn and butternut squash, and I'll try to pick out ones that don't have any nicks or bumps or bruises in them, and then take them home and then store them all winter. And so this is a great time of year, especially in Wisconsin and a lot of other places. It's still the – pretty much peak of the harvest season. You can get some really good deals at the farmer's market, and you can preserve some of those things that maybe you didn't have enough of in your own garden for preservation, but you can take advantage of the talents of your local farmers and buy some of their surplus.
Right, and if you're having issues like we have, we can't grow broccoli or cauliflower for nothing, you can buy, like 50 pounds for $4 at the farmer's market, and you can put something in that spot that you was going to fail at growing it and get poundage or something else out of that same spot, so it works out really well.
Yeah, I think a lot of us don't have gardens big enough to grow everything we want to eat and everything we preserve, unless you live in a rural area and you have a mini farm, so there's nothing wrong with going to the farmer's market and buying and getting some bulk deals and preserving some of those things instead. Not everything has to come out of your own garden.
Right. And people who are listening are like, oh, big-time gardeners don't go to the farmer's market. Well, big-time farmers and gardeners do go to the farmer's market,
yeah.
Just like everybody else. It's a community. Yeah. It's a community that we embrace.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think sometimes people are surprised to find out that I go to the farmer's market. And I actually love going to the farmer's market. I love to see what the farmers are growing. I love to see what people have at different times of year. And I will supplement what I'm growing. There's some things I just don't grow. I don't grow melons, so I'll buy my melons at the farmer's market. Sometimes if I want some blueberries or raspberries, or I don't really grow enough winter squash, because it takes up a lot of room, so I'll go to the farmer's market. So yeah, I think it's fun as a gardener to go and shop at the farmer's market for sure.
Right. Now, you say it's not about the garden, but about the gardener, and which is, I think, a really great thing to say, because most people think you could kind of be a slave to the garden. What is kind of the reaction when you say that to people, and do you think it encourages them to grow their own food more?
Well, I say that because I'm really into education, so I consider myself a garden educator first and foremost. And I think that by building your skills as a gardener, you can succeed over time. So gardens change. We all sell our houses, we move locations. But if you focus on building your skills and building your knowledge, I think that you can be successful anywhere because you can take your knowledge and your skills with you to any garden that you end up having. I've had lots of different gardens in my life, and the one constant is the things that I've learned and the experiences that I've had, and I'm able to feed upon those and inform any kind of new gardening experience that I go into throughout my life.
Well, I have to ask this because a lot of the gardeners are, and guests we have on the program, I ask this question too. What is one thing that you just cannot grow? No matter how many times you've attempted to grow it, it just does not work for you.
Well, I have had some problems with sweet potatoes over the years. And this is actually, so up until this year, I've had a hard time with sweet potatoes, but I was able to successfully grow them this year. But I would say Brussels sprouts I struggle with. I can get the plants to grow, but they never end up being very big, and I've chopped the tops off, and I've tried them in different locations, and I've tried different varieties. But, yeah, I can never get a really good Brussels sprout harvest.
And you're successful at growing sweet potatoes. Now, for people who are not, you're in Madison, Wisconsin. That's what, zone 4A, is that right? Or 5?
About 5A.
I mean, for most people, they think sweet potatoes is a southern hot growing plant. But you're successful at growing it in a mildly cooler climate.
Yeah. I had some failures, and I did some reading and researching about sweet potatoes and found out how some other people are growing them. And so this year I actually used a black plastic on my garden bed. So, and I actually got, I don't love using black plastic in my garden because it's something that you end up throwing out. So I actually got a thicker material that was almost like a black plastic burlap. Almost like a tarp. And so I staked that down in my beds, and then I cut some holes in it, and then I planted my slips into those holes in the plastic. And then I made sweet potatoes like a fair amount of water. So then I also made sure that I really watered that bed really well. We've also gotten a lot of rain in Madison this year, so I didn't have to pay too close attention to watering. And I ended up getting... I just harvested the other day. I got 115 sweet potatoes out of one garden bed. So I planted about 20 plants. And some of the sweet potatoes are huge, much much bigger than ones I usually buy from the store or the farmer's market.
So it can be done. Just learn from your ways and figure out what works best in the climate that you're presented in and put the water to it for at least your situation with the sweet potatoes.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Sometimes, one thing I think that new gardeners often blame themselves when they're having problems, and one thing I think experienced gardeners realize is that sometimes it just takes some practice, sometimes it takes some research and some reading, and I try to tell people that there's, no matter what you do, there's a little bit of mystery that's involved in gardening, and there's times where I do everything right, and things don't work out, and I have no idea why, and so... I think that's one thing that you learn over the years. Like you can do your research and try as hard as you can and educate yourself, but sometimes things still don't work out. But the nice thing about gardening is that there's always next year, and that's one of the things I love most about it is that especially in Wisconsin, it completely comes to a stop. We get to rest, and then we get to begin again in the spring and have a fresh start.
Right. I tell people in mathematics, 8 plus 8 is always 16, but in gardening, 8 plus 8 doesn't always equal 16. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on the program, Megan. For people who, again, want to check out your book, hardcover or electronic, and visit your website, where is that location that they can go to?
Yeah, my website is creativevegetablegardener.com, and you can check out my blog, and I'd love to have you sign up for my email list. I send out a blog post a week all about different things going on in the vegetable garden.
Well, we will have that link in the show notes below. Megan, we really appreciate you taking time out of your day to join us as well as our listeners and share a little bit of your gardening wisdom with all of us.
Great. Thank you for having me. Happy fall, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll be right back after this.
Looking for a fast-acting, non-toxic weed killer for your organic garden? One that works in cool and cloudy conditions as low as 40 degrees and is highly biodegradable with visible results in less than 2 hours? Then look no more. Avenger Weed Killer has it all and more. Made from oranges, Avenger is highly effective, easy to use, and has a pleasant citrus aroma. It is OMRI listed and approved for organic gardeners under the USDA's National Organic Program. Avenger Weed Killer is a choice for organic gardeners and homeowners who are looking for an effective, safe way to control unwanted weeds. Available in ready-to-use sprays and concentrate, ask your local lawn and garden supplier for Avenger Weed Killer. For more information and a list of suppliers, visit AvengerOrganics.com. Avenger Weed Killer, eco-friendly, deadly to weeds.
It's all about the soil at ManureT.com. With their grass-fed, antibiotic, and growth hormone-free cattle and horses, owner Annie Haven puts the quality in her premium soil conditioner. 100% organic and natural, whether feeding your flowers or veggies, indoors or out, you can grow organically with confidence. To purchase authentic Haven brand manure tea, small orders or large, go to ManureT.com. Always free shipping.
Now back to two gardeners that understand where you're coming from.
Are you a lazy gardener? It's okay if you're a lazy gardener.
Joey and Holly Bear.
Welcome back to the program. If you want to check out our sponsors, you can go to the podcast tab at the top of the page, and they'll provide all the information for you. Feel free to support them as they support us.
And those links are also in the show notes below. Well, we have one more task before we get out of here today, and that is Gardening in 2 Minutes. Gardening in 2 Minutes is an audio production that Holly and I produce on a weekly basis during the growing season for a couple of radio programs and a handful of podcasts. If you'd like Gardening in 2 Minutes on your particular program, contact us through our website. This Gardening in 2 Minutes is all about...
This is all about three common tools you're going to use that you need in your garden.
That we recommend.
We recommend.
Here is Gardening in 2 Minutes. This is Gardening in 2 Minutes. With our years of experience in the garden and the kitchen, we have come up with three items that we would highly recommend you looking into and possibly purchasing. It will save you time and make your life so much easier when it comes to gardening and kitchen work.
One item would be a food mill. This is a food mill that mounts on the side of a table or counter, and it has an auger, it has a crank, and it saves you a lot of time because it separates out the seeds and the stems of many things and the skins that you want to can. So this includes things like tomatoes, fruit, squash, what have you, and it has different screen options that you can add to it, and it's definitely a big time saver because as you crank it, it actually takes longer to clean it usually than it does to process what you're putting through it, whether you're a canner or not.
The second item we highly recommend is a garden fork. This is a hard-tined metal fork. It's not a hay fork or a manure fork. These are forks that are designed to use in the soil. They make excavating root crops very easy. They do not destroy, in our opinion, the soil web as much as a shovel would, as well as they work very well for extracting weeds and roots, as most of the loose soil falls through the tines and it retains the structure of the weed or the root crop that you're digging up. You can find these at thrift stores or online. You can buy them at yard sales. They can be an investment, but it's an investment well worth the dollars.
We would also recommend knowledge. Knowledge is something that you gain by being a gardener and working in your garden yourself. Now you may say, you know, this is my first year gardening, I don't know if I gained any knowledge, but you probably have. You have learned something about your yard or your soil or your raised bed or what have you, and what works for you, what doesn't work for you. Maybe you grew 2 tomato plants and that wasn't enough, or maybe you grew 10 tomato plants and that was too much. But we recommend your own garden knowledge.
As well as looking online for questions. Many people have suggestions, but they also have the correct answer as well. For more information on all of these, our weekly video productions, as well as our free downloadable digital quarterly magazines, you can find all that information at
thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.
For Gardening in 2 Minutes, I'm Joy Baird.
I'm Holly Baird.
So three tools, I'm sure we could come up with a list of 15 tools, but we think that those are three good tools.
Yeah.
That you should know, and the cheapest one is knowledge. If you've got the internet, you've paying for that already, learn a little bit about what you're growing. Well, that will do it for the program today. We greatly appreciate you tuning in, sharing, downloading, enjoying, joining us on the program today. again, if you have any questions, feel free to contact us through our website, thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com, and we will get those questions answered for you, as well as all the other projects we've got going on with the Eco Garden House, growing indoors with the Eco Garden House project we're working on through the winter months here in southeast Wisconsin that could apply for you. The audio you've heard on the program is courtesy of sfx.co.uk and audioneutronics.com, two royalty-free and copyright-free websites we help use to liven up the podcasts.
Except for with Dollar Seed and Nestle, they provide their own.
So until next time, I'm Joy Bear.
I'm Holly Bear.
And we will see you in the garden. The Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Podcast is a production of thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com for the health-conscious organic gardener worldwide and distributed in association with WI Garden Media.